Later this week, in High Point, North Carolina, furniture makers and retailers from over 100 countries will be attending the International Home Furnishing Market. It's the biggest furniture show in the world and an indicator of what consumers will see in stores in the fall. Among the merchandise is a piece of furniture that's had a profound impact on American culture and a difficult time gaining respect. Today on Present at the Creation, a series exploring the origins of American cultural icons, producer Cindy Carpian considers the recliner.
In the pursuit of comfort, people that buy furniture often end up in a struggle between comfort and style. Take, for instance, Wayne and Christy Benson from Minneapolis, who were recently in the market for a new chair.
I would always gravitate to the reclining section.
No, what he would do is he'd come in the store and he'd find the ugliest chair in the whole store and sit down in it and say, okay, this is the one we're getting.
And it had absolutely nothing to do with the look of the chair. It had to do with the comfort of it.
For at least two millennia, human beings have been trying to find that perfect position between sitting up and lying down. Ancient Greeks and Romans dined while reclining, but mostly seating was confined to stiff benches and chairs with straight backs. That was until the 1800s, when everyday chairs became upwardly mobile. The backs could tilt. Trouble was, you had to make the adjustment yourself. Then in 1928, two young cousins named Ed, from Monroe, Michigan, produced a chair that reclined if you just leaned back.
This is the original chair. It was simply a wood slat chair that you could kick back in to enjoy a summer breeze.
At the Lazy Boy Museum in Monroe, Lazy Boy historian Judy Carr demonstrates the chair's scissor-like mechanism. Carr says the two Eds, Edward Knabush and Edwin Shoemaker, teamed up to make unusual wood furniture. Shoemaker, though only 20, was by all accounts a mechanical genius and tinkered with a mechanism for a new reclining chair. The cousins then tried to sell a few of these deck chairs to a department store buyer in Toledo, Ohio.
And he said, fellas, he said, it's a great idea, but I'm sorry, it's a seasonal summer chair. You know, if you boys could come up with a chair that could recline like that, but maybe had some stuffing and upholstery and could be used year-round, you know it might sell.
So they hired an upholsterer and spent months perfecting the design. In 1931, Knabush and Shoemaker received a patent for the first automatic recliner, but realized they needed a better name than automatic adjustable chair. They held a contest with their seven employees. The losing names were Comfort Carrier, the Slack Back, and the Sit and Snooze. The winner was Lazy Boy. Eventually, other companies came up with their own recliner variations, but the chair didn't become full-bodied until 1947, when Barker Lounger added the built-in footrest. Goodbye living room, hello den. Big, bulky recliners now took prime real estate in front of new TVs.
Please, Dad, Mom, can I buy it? Can I buy it, huh?
Look, Beaver, why don't we go inside and see if we can't find out what's going on?
Sure, Beaver. If you're gonna act like a nutty little kid, at least do it in a house where the neighbors can't see you.
America has always been a feet-up culture.
Edward Tenner is a visiting researcher at Princeton University. He's writing a book about technology in the body and devotes a whole section to the recliner.
Life magazine ran a major spread in July 1955 under the headline, Leisure, or How Does the American Relax? And over two full pages of various forms of horizontal furniture, as they called them. Then in the New York Times in 1961, do we sit? No, we collapse. New designs for sitting prefigure the passing of the chair as we know it and a state of national recline.
But by the 1970s, the American recliner moved from the den to the basement, though not for lack of love. Our overstuffed clunkers that once looked comfy had become unfashionable. More than a decade passed before some emerged again, looking sleeker with classier fabrics. Many didn't look like recliners at all. Motion furniture, as it's now called, is a $4 billion industry, and baby boomers buy more than anyone else. Recliners even play starring roles in TV shows like Friends.
Hey, Chandler.
Hey.
How would you like to sit in a chair that fully reclines, has a rolling massage, and speakers in the headrest?
Are you telling me that you bought the chair that is making all other lounge systems obsolete? The chair that Sit Magazine called Chair of the Year?
But the future of recliners is more like an episode from the Jetsons. Improved zero-gravity chairs will sense your center of gravity and make you feel like you're floating in air. And we may see chairs that move with a joystick. None of this surprises author Edward Tenner, who wonders if Americans are naturally inclined to recline.
Even in the 19th century, European visitors were astonished to see how often American males would put their boots up on railings, on tables. They just loved to tilt back in their seats.
Recliners may be enjoying social acceptability again, but they may never be on the cover of high-end furniture magazines or get total respect. Remember Wayne and Christy Benson? Christy bought the couple's chair, a compromise recliner, one with a little more style and a little less comfort.
But I'm hoping that I get to be involved in our next couch purchase, which will be the one with the two recliners on the side and the coffee table that flips up and provides the tray to eat your food while you're watching TV.
Oh, we're not going to get the couch. I can tell you that.
At the end of the day, it's the chair I trust. The cushion is comfy and the works don't rust. With a straight line of vision to my Elvis bust. Watch the kingdom eat the bread crust.
And for the record, Archie Bunker sat in a wing chair that definitely did not recline. Maybe that's why he was so grouchy. Cindy Carpian, NPR News.